Yesterday was a Christian holiday known as Pentecost, Pentecost Sunday, or Whitsuntide. In this feast, sometimes it's regarded as the birthday of the church, because it's the coming of the Holy Spirit. Apparently, this was about 10 days after Jesus ascended into heaven, the apostles gathered into a room, and the Holy Spirit came upon them, and suddenly they had the gift of language and were able to go out and start spreading the message. And the Holy Spirit is an aspect of the Christian tradition that fascinates me because it's a very intimate form of the sacred. You know, God the Father is way up there, and God the Son walked around and then he went way up there. But God the Holy Spirit is something that moves in our depths, touches us in our depths. And so it got me thinking about intimacy with the sacred and just intimacy in general. And so that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. The word intimacy, in a way, is challenging because our culture sexualizes it so much. And in fact, even uses it as a euphemism for sex. You know, those two are having intimacy, you know, that kind of thing. Much like the word love is highly sexualized, you know, so that it sounds like it might be off if I say something like, I love children, you know, that sort of thing. I would say that the primary meaning of the word is what we, sometimes it's called emotional intimacy. That is the real definition of the word. I mean, the connection with sexuality is clear because people who are emotionally healthy, they probably don't get to sexual relations unless they're emotionally intimate. You know, those two things often would go together. But of course, there's many kinds of intimacy other than between lovers. There are many friendships that can be intimate. For example, I have a men's group that I meet with every week, and I certainly would say that with these men, I have a very intimate relationship. There can be an intimate relationship at various points in life between a patient and a caregiver, that sort of thing, especially, say, if somebody's in hospice or something like that. That can be a very intimate relationship. And so I'm looking at this broader definition of intimacy. And certainly one of the things required for intimacy is trust. I can't open up unless I trust somebody. And it's always important to keep in mind that, yes, trust has to do with the kinds of signals I'm getting from the other person, but trust also has to do with just my own capacity for trust. How much do I trust life? How much do I trust myself? Has a lot to do with how open my first chakra is, just how grounded am I here? How much can I just trust being alive in this world? And the more I can do that, doesn't necessarily mean I'll trust every single person out there, but I have a capacity for trust that I can bring. The more I trust my own deep knowing, the more I'll have a sense of who I can trust. You know, the head likes to get into these cycles of figuring out, you know, can I trust this person? And, you know, maybe I can, maybe I can't, you know, and of course the head can't decide any of this. Intimacy also requires vulnerability. It requires being very comfortable with vulnerability. Ultimately, intimacy is, it can be very scary. It's very confronting. Because, of course, I'm opening up to another person. You know, I'll have whatever needs or views I have. They'll have whatever needs or views they have. You know, and there's always an element of the unknown. Even if I've already been with that person for a while, there's still always an element of the unknown opening a new conversation, a new connection. And so it demands a comfort with vulnerability, a comfort with authenticity. You know, certainly if I'm trying to hide part of myself, then I'm not really going to be fully present in intimacy. It also requires a deep kind of acceptance. Because if I enter into that connection and I hear where the other person is, and then I start to try to give advice or fix the other person or analyze, then I've left the intimacy. Anything where I'm going into my head, going into the strategic mind, that pulls me out of the intimacy. Yeah, it's, how can I say? It's very confronting. If it doesn't make you at least a little bit nervous, then it probably is not real intimacy. The poet David White talks about this idea of the conversational nature of reality. You know, I go through my world and I have some kind of conversation in my head about who I am and what my life is about and what the world is about, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, every other person has that conversation. And intimacy is the meeting of those conversations. It's where my conversation comes to an edge and somebody else's conversation comes to an edge. And it can be a scary thing to come to my edge. You know, everything about growth is about coming to my edge, about entering into an unknown. And all real intimacy involves some kind of growth. And so it's tremendously challenging, but of course also it has a tremendous capacity for healing. In many ways, we are wired for intimate connection. And really, healing is about loving attention. Loving attention is really one of the most healing things there is. And so when two people are in an intimate connection, giving loving attention to one another, there's a profound possibility for healing there. So that's a little bit about interpersonal intimacy. And of course, being skilled at entering intimacy, it really demands a certain amount of comfort with oneself. And I would say in many ways that my capacity for interpersonal intimacy is very much based on my capacity to be intimate with myself. You know? Can I sit with myself? Can I ask myself the hard questions and sit with them? You know, can I face what is painful in me, not in a fixing mode or a strategy mode, but simply be with it, simply sit with it? Can I trust myself? You know, all these questions. Just as intimacy with another person can be confronting, intimacy with oneself can be confronting. And again, I think the tendency, and certainly it's my tendency, I think it's a human tendency, you know, on a time to, you know, spend time with myself, I want to go into my head and analyze and solutions and strategies and both, you know, and again, that's not intimacy. Intimacy is dropping deep into my vulnerability. And so if we're not, how can I say, if we're not confronting ourselves with our own intimacy, we're not really, you know, arriving fully there. So there's intimacy with others. There's intimacy with oneself. And then there's this topic of intimacy with the sacred. And I would say that in some ways the sacred invites us to an intimacy unlike any other. You know, if we think of Buddhism, for example, you know, what is nirvana? What is enlightenment? It is, It is the dissolution of ego. It is transcending ego. You know, and we can toss around that phrase, you know. I mean, go back to interpersonal intimacy. You know, suppose a partner said, you know, Mike, you know, whatever treasured habit or treasured worldview I had, you know, maybe this is presenting a problem to our connection, and it's something I have to get rid of in the, you know, to relate in that relationship. Changing any one habit or changing any one treasured worldview can be a very painful thing. But any of the individual things that ego treasures, changing those or losing those would be far less traumatic than disattaching from ego itself, you see. And yet that's exactly what Buddhism is asking. You know, and you know, other religions have other symbolic systems for this. You know, Christianity says things like you must be crucified with Christ to share in his everlasting life, this sort of thing. T.S. Eliot has this wonderful phrase, a condition of complete simplicity costing not less than everything. Another way that the sacred is intimate with us is something I would call the teaching.
Get distracted by the texting. I'd rather hear you.
So, any profound life event, good or bad, contains the teaching. You know, so again, for example, suppose I were in a partnership and I love to hike. That's one of my favorite things to do on weekends. And suppose a partner said to me, you know, for whatever reason, they thought that my hiking was, you know, it's hard to imagine why this would be the case, but, you know, I had to stop hiking. You know, like that would be a major, major request for someone to make of me. But of course, at any time it could happen. I could get some kind of illness, some kind of injury, and suddenly I'd never be able to hike again. You know, and that would be a profound teaching. That would be a very difficult teaching to receive. And of course, none of us really know what the experience of dying is like. An experience we will all go through alone. You know, and there's a profound intimacy to that experience. It's hard to say even whether, you know, ultimately are we wired to seek out intimacy and to experience intimacy in life to prepare us for these great intimacies. It's hard to say. So on a lighter note, I do have a quote sheet. From that wise woman, Jane Austen, we get this wonderful quote. It is not time or opportunity that determine intimacy. It is disposition alone. 7 years would be insufficient to make some people acquainted with one another, and 7 days are more than enough for others. From the great television bishop, Fulton Sheen. In every friendship, hearts grow and entwine themselves together so that the two hearts seem to make only one heart with only a common thought, That is why separation is so painful. It is not so much two hearts separating, but one being torn asunder. From that brilliant man, James Baldwin, not everything that can be faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed that is not faced. A profound statement about especially about intimacy with myself. From Reverend John Joseph Powell, it is an absolute human certainty that no one can know his own beauty or perceive a sense of his own worth until it has been reflected back to him in the mirror of another loving, caring human being. And it really is so true. It's so much easier to see other people's greatness and so hard to see our own greatness. And it's something that we really need from each other, just that mirroring. The television psychologist, Dr. Joy's brother, tells us, real intimacy depends on truth, lovingly told, especially in the bedroom. From the Reverend Henry Nouwen, intimacy is not a happy medium. It is a way of being in which the tension between distance and closeness is dissolved and a new horizon appears. Intimacy is beyond fear. From Wendy Wasserstein, the trick is to find balance between the bright colors of humor and the serious issues of identity, self-loathing, and the possibility for intimacy and love when it seems no longer possible, or sadder yet, no longer necessary. From Marion Williamson, enlightenment is the key to everything, and it is the key to intimacy because it is the goal of true authenticity. From Dean Ornish, we have, the need for love and intimacy is a fundamental human need, as primal as the need for food, water, and air. From the great John O'Donohue, real intimacy is a sacred experience. It never exposes its secret trust and belonging to the voyeuristic eye of a neon culture. Real intimacy is of the soul, and the soul is reserved. From this writer, Aberjani, most people are slow to champion love because they fear the transformation it brings into their lives. And make no mistake about it, love does take over and transforms the schemes and operations of our ego in a very mighty way. From Elizabeth Gilbert, every intimacy carries secreted somewhere below its initial lovely surface the ever-coiled makings of a complete catastrophe. That's a bit of a depressing way to say it. I love the way that the poet David White says it. He says that heartbreak is unavoidable. You know, if I pursue a love and then it's unrequited, that might break my heart. But even a love relationship that endures, say, for a lifetime, will break your heart over and over again. Parenting will break your heart, you know. A job that you love will break your heart. And it's really, you know, it's not a question of, can I have my heart broken or not? It's more a question of, will my heart be broken for something worthwhile? From Brad Meltzer, there's nothing more intimate in life than simply being understood and understanding someone else. From the author Kristen Armstrong, real connection and intimacy is like a meal, not a sugar fix. And then this passage just fascinated me from John Green. We're like a bunch of dogs squirting on fire hydrants. We poison the groundwater with our toxic piss, marking everything mine in a ridiculous attempt to survive death. I can't stop pissing on fire hydrants. I am an animal like any other. Hazel is different. She walks lightly, old man. She walks lightly on the earth. She knows the truth. We're as likely to hurt the universe as we are to help it. And we're not likely to do either. People will say it's sad she leaves a lesser scar, that few remember her, that she was loved deeply but not widely. But it's not sad, it's triumphant, it's heroic. Isn't that the real heroism? The real heroes aren't the people doing things. The real heroes are the people noticing things, paying attention. It's almost about an intimacy with life. From Tatiana Malansi, sex isn't hard, but intimacy is terrifying. I'm not even sure how to pronounce this. Jakima Nsi Agu. Don't blow off another candle for it won't make your own shine brighter. Michael Bassey Johnson says, true love is not a hide-and-seek game. In true love, both lovers seek each other. And Susan Botta says, see, don't just look. Your partner is so much more than their appearance. It's how their heart is, how lovely they smile, how much they care and have compassion, how generous and giving they are, which becomes much more attractive.